You are listening to episode number 75 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. And I am the champion of love and justice, your always presumptuous host, Iggy. Of course, joining me, somehow surviving Hurricane Irene. Taser, how's the surfboard treating you?
It's wet. Oh, no, wait a minute. The house is shaking! Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's just wet.
And joining us all the way from the backwoods state of Kentucky, Mr. Johnny V. Johnny V, welcome back to our 75th episode.
I'll tell you, New York doesn't need to worry about this hurricane, but you never know when Gozer and Stay Puft Marshmallow Man are going to come back. Right. That's what you need to be worried about, because Ghostbusters 3 is happening. Sad enough.
Is it happening?
Yeah, I'm actually reading something about it right now.
Has it been since Ghostbusters 2?
They're talking about how, like, even if Bill Murray doesn't want to do it, they're still going to do it. It's not good.
Why doesn't Bill Murray want to do it?
It's about a decade, I think, since the last one.
No, it has to be more than a decade.
Yeah, maybe about 15, really, a generation. Yeah. Close to it.
Just give me anyway. You know what? I don't know if y'all checked out IDW's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles this week.
I haven't read it yet.
For some reason, I don't know. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but I want a new TMNT movie already. Anyways, we are the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast, despite that we're talking about alternative stuff. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, video games, movies, TV, all this other stuff. But let's get right into it, which apparently the week we decided to take off is the week that 20, I don't even know who's releasing Ghost Rider, released the first trailer for Ghost Rider 2, Spirit of Vengeance. And I have to say, from a trailer, again, the movie could be the most, it's coming out in February, so it's probably going to be bad. Looks like fun. It looks like Nick Cage is just having fun with it. He's peeing fire. Some random gangster shoots him in the face, and he spits the bullets at him. They're all inflamed. Like, it looks fun. The bike looks more badass. You know, the effects look a little. They obviously took a budget cut, so they look a little less, but it looks fun. You know, I don't know. I mean, apparently Balder's in it. Not Balder. What's his name? The guy who was in Thor, he was black and was all the rage.
Idris Elba?
Yes, apparently he's some kind of...
Heimdall?
Heimdall is in it. So there you go. There's a connected universe right there. He's watching Nick Cage fuck up another movie. But I don't know. It just looks like fun. Again, this is I remember hating the first one. I haven't watched it since. But hey, this looks like fun. He's peeing on fire. What else do you want? You know, my thing is this is don't expect a lot. Think of it like the Michael Bay Transformer movies. I'm pretty sure you'll have a good time. Johnny V, you've been wanting to ridicule the shit out of this for a while. What did you think of this trailer?
I mean, they don't get it. They don't get it. Like, how badass Ghost Rider is, and
is this
how
your time
so much
jizz fest about the Jason Aaron run he did on it?
Oh my god, don't get me started on that. I will say this though, there's a golden shower in the Jason Aaron. So the pee and fire thing, they might just be doing, you know, a homage to that. I doubt it, but it's so fucking goofy, and Ghost Rider could be so badass. In this trailer, it's just Nick Cage is probably the worst choice for a Johnny Storm of anybody. I'd rather see
not Johnny Cage.
You know what? I'll say this. This is how bad the casting of Nick Cage is. I would rather see a Channing Tatum Ghost Rider.
Pretty boy.
Than I would see a Nick Cage Ghost Rider. And that's saying a lot. That's saying a lot. I will say one positive thing about this is that it will turn out to be a piece of shit. And then I'll be able to make fun of Wes because his boy toy Idris Elba is in it.
is that his latest project now. Taser, I don't know how big of a fan of Ghost Rider you are. Apparently the current Ghost Rider has skeletal boobies, according to Mr. Dragon. But what did you think of this trailer?
Well, aside from, you know, the realization that Dragon likes skeletal boobies, not scaring me as much as it should have. Aside from the peeing fire scene, yeah, I don't think I'm going to go see this movie because it looks like, once again, he's not a demon. He's just some thing that happens to Nick Cage and allows him to ride a motorcycle and throw out a chain and spit out a whole lot of bullets molten. Ooh, I'm not scared. Where's the demonicness? Where's Zarathos? Where's the, you know, big Imperial talking about how he's going to, you know, curse people to the seventh ring of hell and all that other shit?
A legit Blackheart.
This movie just, he's a mutant. For all intents and purposes, he's like, okay, let me do a change. And, oh, look,
he's Cannonball.
I can't
he's
talk.
Cannonball. He's totally,
you know,
Cannonball.
What? Nick Cage would be, make an excellent Cannonball because he's part hick and he looks like a dumbass. And this movie, I'm sorry, it doesn't even have Eva Mendes. I can't even get to see Eva Mendes in that white dress so we can get a nice, tasty look at that tookus. Oh, tasty. Anyway, consider me not impressed, and for the most part, consider me not seeing this movie. Pass.
All right. Well, if I had it my way, Ghost Rider 2 would just be about Sam Elliott kicking ass in the Old West, and it'd be all a supernatural thriller. Because your movie automatically becomes just a little bit better by having Sam Elliott in it.
If you want it to be a supernatural thriller, it's probably going to have to be R. And this movie is so...
No, it's
wedged.
PG-13. It's
exactly, because it's so wedged in PG-13, and it's not going to be anything that's going to scare the shit out of anybody, and that's what you need. There's
no
fear here.
At the heart of Ghost Rider, I mean, there's been a lot of interpretations of him, but Ghost Rider should, and I'm not the only one who said this, but Ghost Rider should be a grindhouse horror, not slasher, but supernatural where weird shit happens. Not fighting pretty boy bandmaids who happen to call themselves Nightmare when they look like another character. You know, I'm not the biggest fan. I may be a fan of supernatural stuff. I'm not the biggest fan of Ghost Rider. I like his concept, but, you know, I agree with you. He could, for all intents and purposes, be a member of the X-Men. Just put a big X on the car, on the motorcycle.
Yeah, really.
I will say this. I like the design of Ghost Rider a lot better in the trailer than I do the first movie. I thought they did a good job of kind of like making his suit look like it's on fire and that it's kind of all black, and it looks a lot, I think it looks a lot better.
And it's Johnny Blaze. Do y'all think...
Go ahead.
Do y'all think they should, I mean, honestly, I'm pretty sure all of us would have rather had them kill off Nick Cage or Johnny Blaze and just brought in Danny Ketch, you know?
But then they'd have to do a whole other origin movie.
Just have him show up with the blue flaming skull. I killed the last guy or some bullshit like that. I'm not a writer, so
I don't know about that.
You know, and Danny Ketch, for a lot of intents and purposes, is more memorable. I mean, Johnny Blaze isn't memorable by any stance, but I don't know. I think Danny Ketch would catch on a lot more.
This movie version of Johnny Blaze isn't memorable because Marvel pansied out in how they created him. Dan Ketch, I think, would probably be even less memorable because, I mean, look at his origin. He finds the motorcycle in the graveyard and touches the freaking thing on the gas
there
can.
You go.
Oh,
the
look,
movie.
He's like the movie.
He gets possessed by the Ghost Rider. Vroom.
No, I don't know. I think Danny Ketch is a little bitch compared to Blaze. That's just...
I'm not going to say that because I like Dan Ketch, you know, and considering what they had done with Johnny Blaze up to that point, Ketch was fun. You know, Ketch was a good read, and, you know, added with Texiera's art, that really carried things. But the one thing that, again, like I said, they need to go back and they need to start dealing with really supernatural shit, not just, oh, look, we've got the four elemental thingies that might be demons, but really we can't tell. But it's going to be an elemental fight. Oh, look, Wind Against Fire, Earth Against Fire. Fuck you. Give me the slumped over horn fang, you know, fire spitting, you know, loincloth wearing demon things that are digging into the graveyards and stealing children. You know, something that's like, holy crap, get out the holy water. I want stuff that comes from the Bible. You know, where's the horror? There's no horror here.
He's pissing fire.
Pissing fire. I did that last night. I had too much spicy food. Anyway.
Irene's going to piss fire all over New York.
Irene can blow me. Hey, she's actually blowing me right now.
One last point, to me, the release date for this movie says it all and how very little faith.
February 2012.
February for...
Well, the last movie was released in February, so that...
It just shows you why bother doing it if you're going to have that little faith in it, that you're releasing it in the fucking month that Valentine's Day falls on.
They're hoping they get another X-Men bit where they shoot the movie really quick and nobody will notice.
Yeah, X-Men turned out to be the movie in the summer. Not saying that Ghost Rider will. I'm pretty sure this will be a piece of shit.
I thought Captain America was.
X-Men Edges is out, but that's another discussion.
Okay.
Not even close.
Real quick, why don't you? I mean, this is a different director. This is different everything besides Nick Cage. I'm pretty sure Nick Cage doesn't have a hand in the story, or maybe he does. Why don't you think the studio won't let anybody do, because I'm pretty sure people have pitched them a R-rated Ghost Rider. If you can do an R-rated Punisher movie, why can't a R-rated Ghost Rider movie work?
Simple, because the studios are convinced that they have to make all their money in the first 2 weeks. And then, you know, they get everything that they get back then. And then after that, hey, whatever happens, happens, you know. But they fail to. They think that they have to have the teens, you know, there. They have to have the kids with the mom and pop, and you know, let little Johnny and his suitably aged sister Susie. They can go there, or you know, Johnny and his date, you know, Jenny. You know, they're gonna go there. They want the teens there. They think the teens really matter. No, you fucking idiots. The teens don't matter. What matters is a good movie, you know? How about keeping it close to the core? Why do you think Blade did good for what it cost?
Yeah, Blade was
how much
rated
it brought
the
in?
First one, at least the first one was rated R, wasn't it?
Both did. The third one
was PG-13.
The third one, the studio stepped in and said, hey, you know what? Let's change this and let's do that and let's do the other thing and let's do that here. Let's make it PG-13.
So Blade is a proof of a successful horror based on a comic book.
If yep. anything,
and
Blade
of course Blade came out before the shit blew up.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
it kind of that was one good thing about it is it released before it became this huge corporate, you know, let's just fucking try to make hundreds of millions of dollars and make everything PG-13. So that they kind of got the luck there in doing that.
And on top of it, Blade is a black character, and not to, you know, really take it there, but black heroes don't really do well on screen because they get seen as, oh, it's a black hero that makes it a black movie, which means I'm not going to go see it, and I'm talking about you Caucasians out there. But that didn't matter because, oh, shit, look, it's Wesley Snipes. He's beating the fuck out of things. He's got a sword. Let's go see it. It didn't matter. People went.
And Chris Christopherson's in it.
Yeah, you know, you can't go wrong with Chris Christopherson. And people enjoyed it.
Last name.
So that's all you need. You know, let's just make a good movie. You know, screw the kids. Fuck them.
Screw
them. I mean that literally. I'm not a pedophile.
I understand doing that for Iron Man. Even, you know, all this mainstream. But Ghost Rider is far from the superhero thing.
Yeah, Iron Man. Okay, yeah, you can do PG-13 for Iron Man. But for Ghost Rider... You kind of need to not make him a pansy.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, let's move on. The only thing worse than Ghost Rider, or PG-13 Ghost Rider, is a PG-13 Punisher movie. There you go.
Ugh.
So let's move on to apparently Marvel is once again, we're going to be stuck in this event cycle. It's reports out of Fan Expo Canada that we've heard about this Shattered Hero stuff for a while. Thor, something's going to happen to Thor in Fear Itself number 6 or 7, which is coming out in about 2 weeks. We already know Thor is being replaced by this supposed, according to our interpretations, Celtic thunder god. We could be completely wrong, though, which would be awesome.
Celtic thunder!
I was going to this is how speechless I am. I was going to just read some stuff, but I'm starting to get to the point where I'm pretty much going to skip anything with this, you know? You know, apparently there's going to be a bigger event in 2012, but I understand why Marvel's doing it, because, you know, the year they really didn't do a whole line-wide event is the year sales tanked to an all-time low.
Well, that would be because their regular stories sucked.
Not necessarily.
There you go.
I mean, no, because there were. I don't think so, because again, comic market's tricky in that. Just because something sells really low doesn't mean not a lot of people are liking it. It's just not enough people are ordering it or aware of it and such and such. There's a lot more factors into it. It's not selling because it sucks. There could be more things. I mean, The Walking Dead only sells 10,000 copies, yet it's regarded as one of the best comic books out there still. So,
which means it's highly rated. But you know what? Highly rated and big selling don't typically go hand in hand. Okay, I mean that holds true for a lot of things like TV and movies and everything else like that. Because you got things that get Academy Awards and not everybody and their mother's seen it. You know,
you're right. But it's just I understand why Marvel's doing this. Because they see it as they tried it. They said, okay, we're not going to do line-wide company events. We're going to do let these stories breathe. And they did, you know, for a while. You know, each book was to each their own. But for whatever reason, and it could, you know, we are in a recession still. Looking at you, Obama, calling you out. I should say the Senate, rather. But it's like, okay, I understand it, but I don't – whatever event comes out next time, it has to really want to wow me at this point. I'm the gung-ho optimist, which is saying something. I'm not tired of the events. It has to be something that's going to blow me out of the water. And I've even said Fear Itself has been okay. It hasn't been great. It's been decent. But Taser – what about you? I'm pretty sure you're pretty much done with all this, right?
I could give a shit about, you know, events. I just want good story. You know, I don't care who's writing it. I don't even really care that much who's drawing it. As long as the art is legible and the story makes sense, I could care less who gave it to me. Because, I mean, let's face it. You can put John Byrne or, you know, J.T. Krull on a book, and it can be an utter piece of crap, and then, you know, 3 months later, same two guys might be on another book, and holy crap, this was an excellent issue. I just want a good story. I don't care that, they're going to shake up the universe. They're going to do something that they haven't thought of doing before. Look, this guy came out of nowhere, or this guy from way back when, he's come forward, and oh, wow, he's more powerful than ever. I don't care. All I want is something that's going to make my time, my, you know, 2 or 3 minutes spent reading the book, because it doesn't take long nowadays. I just want that time not to feel like I wasted it.
Well, it's up to the larger readership, because while a lot of people, we already know your status of how you read your comics, but a lot of people, a lot of stores just order them because they're automatic sellers, because they know they're going to sell, and a lot of stores only carry that stuff. So that's the problem. That's one of the bigger problems right there. But Johnny V,
welcome to my hell.
Blame the comics market and blame them as well.
Oh, I'm doing it already right now. Believe me.
Johnny V, I don't know, because you've been on the show for a long time. I don't know how. I don't even know if you're reading Fear Itself, but are you pretty much don't give a shit about this again?
I'm kind of with Taser in that, events are fine. It's a way to tell a story, and you can do it well. Or you cannot do it well. You know, I don't get excited for events in a lot of the ways some people do, because universes are, like, comic universes are going to shake up, they're going to change. That's just, you know, it's a part of the industry. So the fact that you're changing itself isn't what excites me. It's the story that you're telling me that excites me. So what I read of Fear Itself so far, it's okay. You know, it's one of those, you know, they build up a villain that seemingly cannot be beaten, and everyone's kind of, you know, tails between their legs, no one knows what to do, and the fucking Hulk gets a hammer, and, you know, it's been okay. I mean, I haven't really hated it. I've been keeping up with it. It's not one of those things where, like, I'm looking forward to it when it comes out. To me, it kind of, again, shows the hit-or-miss nature of Matt Fraction, if anything, because, I mean, what he's doing in the Thor book, like, how is that not translating to the badass, like, to making Fear Itself badass? Because if you're reading it's fucking amazing.
It's one of the best
Thor stories I've read in a long time. But how is he not able to do that on Fear Itself to where I'm so wowed by what's happening? It's just not wowing me at all.
I can give at least a theory on why I think. I've said this on the previous show, but you weren't there. But in my opinion, writing Thor is completely different from writing a universe, quote-unquote, universe-changing event where you have dozens and dozens of characters.
That's true.
Matt Fraction has written the X-Men, and that is a large cast, but he's writing the scope of the Marvel Universe now. He's not just focusing on three or four, five, six, at the most, eight characters. You know, this is, and he has to dovetail a whole bunch
that's
of
other
things.
That's true, and to me...
And this is his first time. It's his first time writing this. So I think... Well, again, I don't think we agree Fear Itself isn't bad.
Well, he's written events before, maybe not on this, like, complete Marvel
chain. When I say event, I mean, like, company
like,
line.
Events before.
Like what?
So,
what did he write?
The fucking X-Men one.
But that's part of an old team. It wasn't him just solely. This is him by himself. Him doing
it. No, that was when he did Exodus and whatever it was. I forget, right.
I thought you were referring to Second Coming. See, I forgot about Exodus.
No, I was talking about the Exodus,
no,
whatever.
That one wasn't good.
But, and to me, you know, what you were just saying is why it's so hard to write a good event, because there's just so much shit you have to focus on, and nothing ever gets, you know, layered out in such a way that you get invested into it. I mean, go read Flashpoint. I mean, there's so much potential. There was so much potential for that story, almost to the point, I think, if they had just made that a Flash event, it would have been fucking awesome. If they didn't try to make it into, like, a universe-defying story, it would have been pretty good. And I think maybe Fear Itself, maybe if they tried to not make it as big as they wanted to, it may have ended up being a better story. I think one event that I always point to and say, this is how you do it if you're going to do it and do it right and make a good story out of it is Identity Crisis. No, not Identity Crisis.
What am I thinking about?
House of M?
No. Oh, fuck House of M.
I thought you liked House of M. Either way.
You know what's funny about House of M is the only story I liked in House of M was the Fantastic Four one. I didn't like the main story. I didn't like any of the other add-ons except for the Fantastic Four. I forget who wrote it, but I liked it. And I am thinking of Identity
Crown Saga?
Identity Crisis is what I'm thinking about, actually. I mean, to me, that is quintessential event. It wasn't overblown. It focused on core characters. And while there was, like, other characters involved, you felt like it was really honed tightly in. And to me, that it was the product of just a great writer.
Yeah, as long as that said writer takes, like, a handful of characters, 180s their characterization, and then puts them back in there and makes
and
it
I think
like,
I,
yeah, that's how they normally
and
act.
I don't want to go too much up on Identity Crisis since it's a Marvel show, but to me, it made the point that you don't have to, like, create this, like, universal cosmic sized like threat to make a huge universe defining story. And to me, that's kind of like what's the Serpent. He's just, you know, he's like every other like huge event villain. And if you want to go if you want to point to another event that Marvel did that proved you don't have to do that, look at Civil War. Some people liked it, some people didn't like it. I personally loved Civil War. Especially, I only read the main story because I read it after it released, so I didn't read it while it was going on. I just read through the trade. And as just a standalone story and not kind of buying into the hype surrounding it, I thought it was a really well-done story. So it's just one of those things. Sometimes events, you know, you do them right, and it feels fresh and something new, and sometimes it's not. And Fear itself just feels kind of vanilla to me. It's very vanilla.
They're all chasing the Civil War capture. They want that. They want that again.
I think we can all agree that you don't have to restructure the universe in order to capture people's attentions and
just tell good stories.
Bring
I
them
mean,
to exact. Well, that goes back to exactly what I've been saying.
Just yeah, well, exactly. Just we got we're hammering it in this time.
To do it. You know?
Well, I mean, like in Iron Man right now, Tony Stark's is having a relapse. You know.
Again.
Well, yeah, wait. We haven't seen that in 20 plus years. So.
Again. In regards to Tony, that probably was 5 years ago. So.
He didn't have a relapse 5 years ago.
No, in his time 5 years ago.
Oh yeah, well, fuck.
Comic time and our real time are two different things.
It's 7 years, whatever. Just real quick before we move on to some other stuff. There's gonna be point dot issues. Fear itself 7.1, 0.2, 0.3. Each of them are going to be. One's gonna be spotlight on Captain America. One's gonna be on Thor. Basically, the big three. I hate saying that because I fucking hate DC doing it, but I'm going to say it just to summarize thing up. Cap is going to mourn over the death of Bucky. Something's going to happen to Thor in his book, and apparently Tony Stark's sort of relapse is going to sneak out into the public. So somehow, I don't know. But apparently there was some Avengers stuff in Canada. I don't know if you heard about this, but at D23, Tom Hiddleston, Colby Smothers, Chris Hemsworth, Robert Downey Jr., and a whole bunch of other cast were at there. Apparently, there was some footage. We don't have it. It's not out. They won't release it for a little while. But apparently, we got lots of shots of the Avengers doing stuff, kicking ass. There's one monologue that was highlighted, somebody sent me, where it's... They're looking at Loki on a screen. It's Robert Downey Jr., Captain America, the Hulk, not Hulk, Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner, Black Widow, Hawkeye, basically the Avengers. They're Tony Stark. Okay, let's do a head count. We got a God of Thunder, or he calls them a demigod, which I found odd. Two deadly assassins, and it cuts to Black Widow and Hawkeye. We got a living legend who lives up to the legend. And, you know, and I think he mentions the Hulk. I can't remember exactly. And, you know, Loki says, I have an army, which has led to some people speculate that it might be the Skrull army. Who knows? We don't really know. And then Tony Stark says, we have a Hulk. And apparently Mark Ruffalo is transforming to the Hulk in the background. So, and we've all seen this footage of them shooting in Cleveland, blowing shit up, and Captain America and Thor and... This is, it's almost feeling again more real surreal at this point that there's actually an Avengers movie coming out with Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, Black Widow, Hawkeye. The only thing's missing is the Vision, really.
Ant-Man, Wasp.
Where's the Wasp?
Who? I'm just kidding. I love Hank Pym. Science is supreme. But, I mean, Taser, can you get any more hyped up for this movie?
Be perfectly honest. I'm not that hyped up. I mean, don't get me wrong. I am looking forward to it, but I'm not itching in my pants like I was for Thor. I got to be honest. Thor had me like, oh, yeah. I'm making a Thor movie. Avengers? Okay, yeah. All right. Okay, cool. They're making an Avengers movie. That's kind of it for me.
Right.
I'm looking forward to it. I haven't seen anything that's made me, you know, that's made me want to rant on it, but I'm not.
It feels surreal more by this point. I mean, the only more surreal moment you can get in this is having Superman and Batman fighting each other on live action screen. That's about it. At least at this point. Johnny V, what about you?
I'm pretty excited. To be quite honest, spoiler for anyone that hasn't seen Captain America in theaters yet.
It's been a month. They should have seen it by now.
Well, you never know. You know, I'm you know, being safe. But anyway, at the end when they show that the trailer, I was in silence. Like, I couldn't believe it, that it's actually going to happen. And just, I can't even imagine the logistics of getting all of those stars onto the same screen at one time. Like, you know, I haven't been keeping up with the news of how much people have been paid to do what, and like how much they had to add on to the contract to even get them to do the Avengers with each other. But it's just amazing. You know, I think with Ed Norton, it would have been better, but Mark Ruffalo is a good actor. I don't think anyone's, you know, too pissed that Mark Ruffalo is going to be Bruce Banner. And to me, they got the perfect director. I'm not necessarily a huge fan of his, but if you've ever seen Serenity, he knows how to direct big groups, which is, you know, obviously important when you're doing the Avengers. So with Whedon on it, with the trailer I saw at the end of Captain America, you know, color mix, I can't wait. I don't even know how to put it into words, really.
It's I'll say it's more surreal. Again, the only thing that could get me more excited and more surreal is if you have Batman throwing a batarang in Green Lantern, you know, in some kind of costume or whatever, hitting somebody with a boxing glove. on live action. That's the only thing. But enough about the news. Let's move on to our book of the week, which it's going to be the Ultimates number one. I think this is like the sixth Ultimates number one since it came out in 2002. Either way, almost been 10 years. But this is by Jonathan Hickman and Esad Rivik on as the team, and apparently S.H.I.E.L.D. is being stretched too much. That's basically the gist of it, and I like that idea that S.H.I.E.L.D. is basically we've known this S.H.I.E.L.D. is an extension of the United States government, and they are being run thin. They have all these code yellows. Apparently there's these weird people in yellows and white suits or whatever, and they're creating this dome. I really don't know what that was about. I feel like I should have known that. I don't know
what... Reed Richards.
It's Reed Richards? See, I don't know who that was. Yeah. I'm like, who is this person?
It's Ultimate Reed Richards.
Okay. I guess I was an Ultimate Fallout. That's kind of... See, that's bad. Or it could just be the ominous bad guy, and they'll reveal him soon to the people who didn't read that. Either way, that actually makes it more impressive. And apparently there's a drinking bear. I did thought it was pretty funny that Jamie Braddock, who in the 616 Marvel Universe is the insane psycho brother of the Braddock family, and now he's Captain Britain in this universe. He doesn't look psycho, but he punched the shit out of Thor. I liked his characterization of Nick Fury. It didn't feel the same when he wrote Secret Warriors, Nick Fury, you know, as if Sam Jackson was basically doing the role, which is, you know, he's basically Sam Jackson. I don't know. I thought it was a very decent, good issue. It wasn't the greatest thing in the world. You know, Esad Rivik is doing what he does best. He's doing a little bit of what Hitch is doing with the sort of making it feel big, like a big movie, but he's not aping Hitch. He's doing it in his own style. So I like that much. It seems like fun. I don't know what Reed Richards' endgame is, whatever it is. I'm hoping to find out. I did like the whole after the first page and then you flip it and it's two white pages with like a title card, sort of like a movie, like you see the movie titles. And Hickman's doing that in his indie book Red Wing, which I thought, oh, that's cool. Why not bring it over here? You know, for people who, a lot of more people are reading the Ultimates than they are will ever read Red Wing. So that's cool to see that. I'm looking forward to issue two. I don't know how long I'll stay with this because I think honestly issues 2 through 3 will be the game breaker to see how long I stay with the series. But this wasn't a bad start. You know, not nearly as bad as Loeb and Joe Madd a couple of years ago. So I give it a 4.1 out of 5. Taser, you said it brought, before show, you said it brought you a familiar feeling. Care to explain that?
Yeah, it felt like I was reading Stormwatch all over again. That's not a good thing. You know, I've been here, done that. It didn't make me feel good. I understand that. You know, they were going for, there's a lot of crap going on in the Marvel Universe post Spider-Man's death and you know, Captain America having bowed out because he grew a vagina. But to see Nick Fury just like, what's going on now? Hold on, wait a minute. Oh my gosh. Are you guys, is somebody going to be over there?
It sounds like a manager at Walmart.
Exactly, which is exactly how Stormwatch used to come off. And I'll be perfectly honest, I don't want to read Stormwatch. You know, I liked my Nick Fury that had a handle on shit, and if things didn't work right his way, he got in there and smacked somebody. You know, I like this. This guy is just kind of tired. It's so hard. Oh, my gosh. What do I have to do now? When? I'm waiting for his vagina to grow. And speaking of that, you should have seen the last page of freaking Ultimate Fallout 6. He grew in there. So, this book didn't do a whole lot for me. I got to be honest. It's decent art, but the story was, like, so freaking transparent. You know, I can't say a whole lot for it, so I have to be real terse and give my scoring's got to be 2 warriors out of 5. It really didn't do a whole lot. I'm giving, and that's what the art. Art was good.
All right. Well, Johnny V, having read this, you're not familiar with the Ultimate Universe. What did you think of this as coming in as a newbie?
I'm not lying. This is the first full issue I've ever read of anything going on in the Ultimate Universe. You know, just looking at it as a standalone issue and not having any idea what anything's going on, the first thing I thought of after reading it is, why the hell in the Ultimate Universe is supposed to be completely separate from 616 is Asgard on fucking Earth?
Yeah, you know, somebody explained to me when that happened. I was curious about that as well.
I don't know when that happened.
So I don't know how connected this is to the events that's going on in the actual Ultimate Universe, or how much of it is Hickman setting stuff up for later in the story. You know, I have no idea. So I don't know if in Ultimate Thor, if for whatever reason Asgard's on Earth. You know, I have no idea. And
it was kind of hard to tell because you can. The European super people were flying up. So I don't think it's necessarily on Earth, but it seems to be.
It's the same concept, though, that Asgard has somehow broken through a portal and is on Earth somehow. I mean, it kind of seems like they're doing it differently, but it's still the same concept. They may not be in Broxton, Oklahoma, you know what I'm saying? But it's still the same concept of, you know, having Asgard be a part of Earth, and
I'm not even sure we've ever seen Asgard in the Ultimate Universe yet. To be perfectly honest, I don't think we've actually done that.
Well, again, you know, don't ask me, because it was actually eye-opening to me that you said that was Reed Richards, because I figured it was just the setup for whoever the villain's going to be for the book. Because you know he has that big ominous mushroom dome-looking whatever this is. And,
was that a mushroom? I thought it was something else, but I ain't gonna say what it was.
But anyway, I just figured it was like gonna be the setup for the villain in the book. But that's kind of funny you say it was Reed Richards. I don't know if maybe Reed Richards is a bad guy. I have no idea. I don't read the Ultimates. Anyway, getting back to the more like I guess technical aspects of the review, to me it felt like classic Hickman, very dense. You know, you really have to be on top of your game to read a Hickman book. Go read S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, that shit, it'll blow your mind and at the same time make you want to throw something through a window. And to me, you know, it's one of those things where you have to take Hickman for his, you know, positive aspects and his faults. One thing I've always thought about Hickman to me is one of his great tools is his dialogue, especially with Tony Stark. I love Tony Stark in this. And to be honest, like, what I've read in this issue, to me, he's a lot more fun to read than anything I've read in the 616 in a long time. You know, he's definitely more of an asshole. Reminded me a lot more of Tony Stark in the Iron Man movies than
To be fair, I know that's an easy comparison. He's kind of always been like that ever since the initial.
Not in 616 wise, not.
No, I'm talking about Ultimate Universe wise. He's kind of.
Oh, okay,
more of a dick.
He's
Ultimate Universe wise, he's always kind of been more of a dick.
Okay, then that's good. You know, that would make him more interesting in terms of comparing to what I've read of him in the 616. I also liked the when Captain Britain tries to invade Asgard. I thought that was pretty funny. You know, Doobie Brothers Thor wasn't taking that shit. Ended up kicking in
that. I love how that was perfectly speechless.
Yeah, definitely. I thought that was a great page. Overall, I liked it. You know, it's just one of those things where I'm just not invested. I have no idea about any of these characters, and it seems like one of those books that was made for people that are already invested in the Ultimate Universe. But kind of an outside-looking-in kind of review, I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5. Hickman just knows how to write in a way that appeals to me, especially in terms of dialogue. And what was the guy's name? Ribic? Am I pronouncing that right?
Esad Ribic.
Ribic. Good art. You know, not the greatest art ever, but serviceable for a book like this where you got all kinds of things going on. You have to keep the action well-paced. I thought he did a good job. So I think, yeah, 3.5 out of 5. It was a good read, you know, considering I know nothing about anything involving the Ultimate Universe.
All right, well, what do you give it out of a 5?
Oh, I said 3.5.
All right. Well, yeah. Let's move on to individual reviews. And I I'm taking Wolverine number 14. This is by Jason Aaron and Renato Gaidos. They've been on Wolverine since a year ago. This is the final issue of Wolverine's Revenge. And I've reviewed a lot of these, so basically it's been the same thing. Wolverine cuts down these nobodies. It's sort of like, I saw somebody say in a review, a video game, you fight a couple of subbies until you finally get to the boss. Well, before he even gets to the boss, the right hand all commit suicide via cult, and they drink some kind of poison drink. We get this new history of a black kid whose mom apparently was the nurse that Wolverine stabbed, an enemy of the state. So we get that, and we've been getting this idea that they want to fuck with Logan. They sent him to hell, but they want to do worse to him. They want to fuck with him. So he kills all these people, and he then proceeds to get, they're all dead. What the fuck's going on? A video recorded message comes up of the old man telling him, you know, all these other things, these revelations. And apparently these people were called the Mongrels. These nobodies Wolverine has been fighting. And that's important. And apparently this is what he says. These mongrels you killed, we gathered them together over the years from the far corners of the globe. We trained them to fight you, never expecting they could actually win. Quite the contrary, in fact. We wanted them to lose. We wanted them to die by your hand. Why, might you ask? Then Wolverine realizes it, and then the old man says, because they're your children. And then the last thing he says is, welcome James Hylett to the right red hand. He had Wolverine brutally murder his own kids. And as soon as I read that, I literally just went, holy fucking shit, that's fucking sick. And Wolverine is just devastated. The last panel is him just gripping with it. And he's looking through this book that has all of this detailed information of the people he's killed, and that it's his kids, and that's how they wanted to get him, because you can't really kill Wolverine, so that's how you get him. And they got these nobodies, and if anything, Wolverine, he doesn't want to hurt anybody close to him. So I thought that was a really good twist that I fucking didn't see coming. That's how messed up this is. There was another little beat where you see the right red hand go to hell, and they're all reunited with their husbands, wives, et cetera, et cetera. But the little black kid can't find his mom. So he's stuck in hell, but she's probably in heaven somewhere, you know. So little black kid, you done fucked up. It was a really good issue. The twist ending made it all. And I had heard there was something that was going to happen, and I didn't realize what it was. But, yeah, if you're not reading Wolverine, you best start reading Wolverine. I know I spoiled this, but start reading with the next issue. I give this a 5 out of 5. This was really good. a good combination of storytelling, and Renato Gatos's use of facial expressions. It was just all around good, all around good. I never thought I'd be reading a Wolverine title like this and enjoying it this much. But let's go from one generative 90s character to another. Johnny V, you're taking with the Punisher number two.
He is. Overall, this, I mean, it's only two issues in so far. This might be one of my favorite books this year. I mentioned the Identity Crisis earlier and how great I thought it was. And, you know, I talked about how the reason for that is because of who wrote it. And, you know, it just, you can see the talent level of fucking, of Ruckus shine through here. I'm trying to think where to even start with this. Basically, if you read the first issue, I think you'll be pleased with where it goes in the second, setting up the wife and the wedding and everything that happened in the first one, and kind of, instead of trying to just make a brand new origin story, it kind of relates to his origin through it happening to someone else, which I thought was really cool. And the book probably has one of the most dramatic moments I've read in comics this year. Because initially, in the first issue, you thought the bride is killed, but she's not. And then she ends up waking up in the hospital, like, remembering back on what happened. And Rucka just, man, he just knows how to set up drama and then deliver on that drama, because, like, once she kind of, like, she kind of talks about remembering everything and everyone that was there, and then she, after doing that, she, it's a silent page, and it just kind of shows her, like, it finally hitting and going crazy. And to me, it was such an emotionally impactful two pages. And again, another thing that the first issue did that translated over to the second issue that I really liked is Punisher still has not said anything. And I just get one of those feelings that when he does say something, eventually it's just going to, oh, I'm going to hate it. Like, I really just want him to stay silent and just be more of a force of nature than an actual person. So I'm still loving that gimmick. It's kind of a gimmick, but it's a very... it's a good effect. It's a good gimmick in my eyes. It's kind of like the setup of the guy that kind of shot up the wedding. It was one of those things where he tried to go to different people for help, and everyone kicked him away. I was like, I don't want you bringing the fucking Punisher around here. So I think Ruckus did a good job of kind of creating the character of Frank Castle without him saying much or even actually doing much. It's been more about the people that are around the Punisher more so than him, but it's been setting him up in such a way that he's kind
of... Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt.
Yeah, exactly right. Definitely. There was one panel in the first issue where, I mean, they weren't even trying to hide the fact that they were going for the 7 version of Morgan Freeman. I mean, it was dead on Morgan Freeman. There was nothing quite that bad in this one, but yeah, definitely a setup for that. The one thing I didn't like is I didn't like that they're setting up the Vulture for issue 3. I kind of would like to keep any super power based characters out of this book, because it has such a noir, kind of a noir feel to it, and it's so, like, emotionally grating that I feel like adding someone super powered to it would kind of take away from that. But I'm not going to dock any points for something that you're setting up for next issue, because obviously we don't know what's going to go on there. I thought the art, you know, it's not my favorite, but it's one of those things for this book. I think it's on point. It's got kind of a dirty feel to it. Good coloring, really good coloring, I think, for the type of story they're telling. I think the coloring is on point. I'll give this book 4.5 out of 5. I think the art could be better. I think beyond the detectives and the bride. There's not too many strong, like, the villain. Like, I don't think they really set up the villains really well in this second issue. So hopefully in the next issue they'll be able to expand on that a little bit more. But everything that was self-contained in issue number two, I'll definitely give it a 4.5 out of 5. I highly recommend it. If you've been a fan of the Punisher and just like the simplistic nature of him being a badass and don't want to see a whole bunch of other nonsense, then definitely pick it up.
Yeah, the thing about the Vulture thing real quick before I hand out the tasers, I think that's an excellent way to say, hey, we're – and even Nora Winters showing up from Amazing Spider-Man, like, hey, we're in the Marvel Universe, but the Marvel Universe is not in this, you know? I think, like, sinking things like that, you know? But let's hand it off to Taser, who – Taser, you know what? I'm just going to let it go all hell loose with Ultimate Fallout number 6.
Ultimate Nick Fury grew a vagina. That, I mean, that's
bad.
Him and Ultimate Captain America. Ultimate Captain America showed up and had balls to spare. You know? At the end of this, his vag turned into the Holland Tunnel. Whereas Nick Fury, he's just started developing, you know? Who knows how deep it is, but I'm sure it could probably get some use. Either way, Ultimate Fallout was just, oh my effing God. Well, let's see, what do we have here? First story is basically Gwen and Aunt May deciding to check out of Dodge, and they're going to take up Tony Stark on his offer to relocate them anywhere they want to go. They decide to opt for France, which sounds nice, but, you know, to be perfectly honest, isn't Gwen Stacy still like a high school student? And she's electing to leave with Peter's aunt to go to another country. That their whole conversation, the way they played off each other, it was like watching two lesbians decide, oh, we're going to take a long trip. Really? Did I miss something here? Gwen got black hair now. Doesn't look bad on her, but makes sense within the context of what's going on, but just seemed kind of wrong. And that coupled with, you know, them talking about leaving together. Like, really? But hey, whatever. So that's how their story ends. We move to Kitty, Johnny Storm, and Ice Kid, teenager, whatever the hell he is. They're taking a tour of the New York City sewer system a la the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and basically Kitty leads them to the Morlock Tunnels, and look, we got a base of operations. I'm like, yeah, but you're still in the sewer. Really?
If it's cool for the Turtles, it's cool for the X-Men, apparently.
Come on, the sewers? See, now, I'd buy that if they were being hunted or whatever, and I know Kitty was just trying to, you know, keep her face out of the limelight, especially what with that whole Ultimate X, you know, get all mutants.
Isn't Jean Grey in this team or something?
No. Oh. No, Jean Grey is keeping Hulk, you know, calm, so to speak. She worked out a deal with Fury, which is actually not bad. All right, I kind of like that. But this just seemed wrong. I'm like, I can't recall seeing Sue or Ben in all of this. And, I, you know, hey, they knew Spider-Man. So I'm kind of thinking, hey, you know, why would he leave with them and live in a sewer when he could be wherever they are? Although, considering where most of the Ultimate Enemy ended up, they're probably off doing their own thing in a bed somewhere. So screw it. These three guys end up in a sewer in the Morlock Tunnels, which makes no fucking sense whatsoever. Okay, moving right along. The third vignette is the Triskelion and some pencil-pushing nobody goes to Nick Fury to appraise him of a few things, and Nick tells him that he's stepping out, and the guy asks Fury, sir, are you okay? Yeah, seem a bit shook. And the guy basically tells the dude that Captain America quit. Turned in his shield. Grew that badge. It got even bigger. Now it envelops all of Manhattan Island. And the guy's standing there like, oh my God. The shield's lying there on the desk. I can't believe it's here. Oh, really? F that. Stupid story is stupid. And last but not least, we see one of the stops that Nick Fury had where he goes to visit Mary Jane, who's writing, she's writing How the World Killed Superman. And she's all... And a helicopter shows up, and Nick Fury is at the door. In her bedroom door.
A black man invading a teenage white girl's bedroom. That's all. That's for all sorts of kind of wrong right there.
You know, it's bizarre, but, you know, and oh, look, it's a black man in my room. I'm like,
could you even see him with the lights on? Oh.
All black man. You know, I'm thinking pregnancy. But anyway, so he goes and he looks what she's written, and she sits there just like, is it good? Do you think I got a chance with this? And he lets out that he knew Peter's parents. Now, I know in 616, Pete's parents were actually S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. I have no idea what was going on with this. I know that they were working on what became the web formula, but beyond that, I don't know anything. But here, Nick Fury knew Peter Parker's parents. And he knew that they were working on a project for him, and he apparently kept tabs on Pete. He knew of Pete when he was born. And now he's all upset that he didn't do enough to slow the world down so he could grow up to blah, 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 blah. That vag just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And last panel, the last statement that Nick Fury says to Mary Jane, quote, I understand that you're looking for something to blame for this. My point is, you blame me. And I came here to tell you, you're absolutely right. That's it. But and tear from the eye, because he's only got one eye. Tear!
Tears in his eyes, I guess. Cinderella boy.
I just, you know, this is a female book. It's all, I should have been more responsible. I let a hero down. I should have done so. He's only 15. Oh, my God. If I'd have had this as an actual comic, I wouldn't have even wiped my ass with it. I would have found the nearest hobo, wiped his ass with it, and then found some lighter fluid, and then burned it on the front doorsteps of Marvel offices, because this book was garbage. Fuck you, Marvel. Fuck you for putting this book out. 0 out of 5.
Nice.
Fucking horrible-ass book is horrible. Well, not worth the paper was printed, not worth the color that would colored it, not worth the effort put into making it. His book was dumb. And it resolved itself horribly. I'm pissed that I wasted effort on it.
Well, the whole real quick before, I'm not trying to defend the book or anything, but the whole Ultimate Nick Fury knew Peter Parker's parents, that's nothing new. That was in a miniseries called Ultimate Origins, and they were working on the Hulk project from the Super Soldier Serum project, which everybody in the Ultimate Universe was working on.
Okay. Now, like I said, I didn't know about that, and I don't question that.
Okay.
But the whole, okay, I should have done something to the whole regret. I can understand having regret that a young person was lost, or even maybe that a young hero was lost. But to see the weight that he's trying to act like he's carrying is just bullshit. Fuck Captain America quitting. He quit because he told Peter Parker in some book that I didn't read that he wasn't ready. Get the fuck out of here! Seriously!
So, yeah. Did not like this book.
Well, I mean, the whole lost my train of thought. Fuck it. Let's conclude the show. if you want to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thewarriors3pcast. Warriors3.com, obviously. Visit us at thegreenlanterncore.com. You know, that's where we all really make our home. And you can see Taser poke at a jellyfish for 24 hours a day. It's fun.
Yeah.
and apparently, the global currency is in effect. I don't know how, but apparently it is. Johnny V, do you have anything to plug tonight? How's that comic of yours going?
Just got done with the first edit. Sent it back to him, waiting on that. When the script's done, I will be launching my website. So look out for that. Also, another thing to plug, Paul Rubens turned 59 today.
Pee-wee Herman! Kick ass!
Pee-wee Herman is 59. Jesus. That's pretty fucking crazy. Yep.
Probably would have died of cocaine a long time ago. Anyway, Taser, what about you? What do you have to plug today?
I want to give, I think all of us would like to give a big shout out to Super Lantern and his whole, you know, auditioning for the Orlando Magic thing. That he gets a chance at competing in a 7-week weight loss competition with Nick Anderson and two others. Thumbs up to you, buddy. Still no giraffe porn for you. You get none. None.
Super Lantern and Gamma Geron are not the same person.
Same thing. Anyway.
It's not like Super Lantern listens to the show anyways. He hates us. I think he hates me.
Good. As long as
everyone hates you.
But, well, Gamera John, that porn thing's for you, and Super Lantern still, good luck to you, buddy. And what we should have done last week, which was your fault, because you assumed that I was going to do it, and you know I'm lazy.
2 weeks ago.
That, whatever. Okay. Godmera made a post on the boards about Leia Esquenazi. Apparently this girl's really sick, and if you'd like to help out, there's a website here, princessleiadiaries.blogspot.com. They have a Facebook thing here, Facebook, whatever. The little girl was diagnosed with a terrible medical problem since birth, and just a few months ago, she's remained a medical mystery to all those involved in her care. She's been suffering from motor skill problems, seizure-like activity and movement, vision, respiratory problems. It's some really bad stuff for such a little girl. So if you want to help out, seriously, we really, you know, we here at the Mighty Marvel 3 podcast, our hearts go out to her and her parents. And, well, if you want to help out, we'll make a post requote what Godmera posted, and you can take it from there. But you know, good job on Godmera for you know throwing it out there. He's got a heart. Me, I don't, but every so often I like to do the nice thing. So there you go.
And of course, starting sometime next week, it's definitely the second week of September. The highly anticipated return of D-Cups will be coming back.
D-Cups!
Me, Kuhan, and the awkwardly slow-showing Chris Healy will be back, all three of us, to discuss the new 52. The Taser's not excited about, so he only listened just because of D-Cups. But tune in for that. I'm very excited to do a DC show. And Johnny V, don't forget to pay that domain registration. I'm Iggy, the champion of truth and justice and love.
Old news, man.
We'll see y'all next week for episode number 76.